Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
It's one thing to make a film, but then when you unleash it, it's a gladiatorial sport in Cannes, and you have to be there hand in hand with the filmmaker to not protect them in a mollycoddling sense of the word, but just to make sure that it gets the film gets shepherded out and inside the right conversation. And it was so exciting, Mariella, about to see, Scorsese's film dealing with one Indigenous culture, and of course Warwick Thornton being an Indigenous filmmaker. New Boy has a very different perspective on in yet another Indigenous culture. And I know that there's a Chilean film from a first-time film director, which was talking about the colonization and the exploitation of Chileans from that perspective of that Indigenous culture. So it's really, it feels like the film has landed inside a really important and interesting conversation that's been tackled from a lot of different angles, which was, I must say, it was exhausting, but it was really exciting. And certainly, I don't know what you felt, but it was, Cannes was back in all of its gorgonous glory, So all those people who sort of doubted that, cinema was on its last legs. You certainly didn't feel that when you were there. I felt really excited for audiences.
Yeah, and I think that the sort of menu of films, as you pointed out, was, it was a relief not to be still trapped in the Marvel days. And I think particularly that notion of exploring Indigenous lives, and it clearly has landed in the right moment. Was that what appealed to you, first of all, about The New Boy, which is set in the 1940s in Australia? It's a passion project, really, isn't it, from director, writer Warwick Thornton, because it's based on his own experience.
Yes.
I mean, you get to your point as an actor and, you can make or break a film. So to lend your voice to it. Not at all. Not true. We'll go back to Tar in a minute, but not at all. But, how much do you think about that as well when you're choosing your part?
I think it's, in the end, it's instinctual, both as an actor and as a producer through Dirty Films. And that was the first conversation, really, during the pandemic, was, my partners, Andrew Upton and Coco Francini, were thinking, well, who do we want to be in dialogue with? And of course, like everybody who was away from home, even though I live in England now, you never really leave Australia, let's face it. It's a very magnetic country. Maybe you never do from wherever you live. But I'd met Warwick in Berlin, and we had a lot of people in common. A lot of the actors that you see in the film were mutual friends. And Warwick and I just started this late night rambling conversation that evolved in him pulling the script of The New Boy, which had been in his proverbial sock drawer for 18 years. And it had been something that he'd written it's loosely based on his own experience being an Indigenous man who went into a Catholic school and trying to reconcile a sense of his own Indigenous spirituality with relating to the tortured nature of Christ on the cross. And how does the positives and the negatives that he drew from that experience. But I think when he wrote it 18 years ago, he wrote it with a lot of anger, and he was a young man. And since then, it's really interesting that his spin on that same story that was written with rage is fueled with love and optimism. That's what was interesting about having the conversation with him, is I had read the script that he sent me and thought, oh, this is an incredibly dark film. Because obviously being a white Australian person, I'm filled with shame and regret, you know, and finally getting an Indigenous voice into the Australian Constitution. There's a lot going on. But yet Warwick had wanted to look at this through a very different prism. So, and then as we started talking, he said, what if, you know, we said, what if we flipped it to a nun? And this becomes a story without a father in a patriarchal structure. And so it was a really fascinating journey. I just knew that I wanted to be part of that conversation. And then I ended up being involved as an actor. But the acting stuff really came second. And I think in a way the part always, whether it's working with Todd Field on Tar, it was to be part of that conversation with Todd, and then there was the role. It's rarely the role that draws me first.
And I was struck by something you mentioned there that it was originally a part written for a priest and changed, obviously, to facilitate you, because even though you're a brilliant actor, you decided not to play a priest. And but there are similarities there. I know you could do it. There are similarities there with Tar, which you just mentioned, that actually I had to think a lot more about my idea of a monster or a predator, and that in many ways it sort of added oxygen to a discussion that otherwise would have been very emphatic. He bad, you know.
Yes. And I think in a way, say for example, with New Boy is the New Boy is that Warwick and I kept saying, if you have a priest and a young Indigenous boy on the poster, you think you already go.
I know that story.
The cinema, I know that story, and it's very hard to sort of disrupt the preconceptions. And with Tar, I mean, I would challenge the predator monster analysis, but I think that there's many ways to read the movie. To me, it was about power. In a way, we know what patriarchal power looks like, don't we? We know how that plays out. Whereas it with a woman at the center, unassailably, unquestionably deserving to be at the pinnacle that she's at, we're able to examine the behaviour that results from being exposed to institutional power in a much more nuanced way. It was much more confronting. And what was so exciting as a result was that the film is one thing, but I always love it, and I know this experience viscerally from being on stage, when you get spat out into the auditorium and people have moved beyond the theatrical experience into the conversation afterwards. It's the conversation afterwards that you always want to generate. And so that's what we're hoping the new boy can be a part of, and that certainly Tar became a part of. It's all about placing these, scaffolding the films so that they can be part of the conversation, because in the end, it's for the audience, because there's so much, and I hate this term, content around blocking the path of the interesting stories often.
You kind of famously go deep, dare I say. I always quote from Tropic Thunder, because it is obviously the great intellectual film of our times. But, you know, you tend to go full. And I think Todd Field described, I mean, just never having come across an actor who worked in the way that you did. He said that you memorized the entire script.
He might have been politely trying to avoid the word obsessive.
but I think that you don't go into a film just to appear in it. You do go full, as it were. And how difficult does that make you to be with? Because you must have to divide life, private and work.
Oh, I mean, that's where having four children has been a godsend. It's literally, you cannot take your work home. They couldn't be less interested. So I'm totally able to switch off. But the thing is, it's a, you know, I mean, I don't want to sound too pretentious, any more pretentious than I naturally am. But, you know, it's a vocation for me. I get to spend the day doing what I love. You know, of course, I'd love to be better at pool, and I would love to be, you know, to learn to surf and have a hobby. You know, I do get an enormous buzz from talking to Ali Abassi or Lucretia Martel or, you know, Gaspar Noé or Warwick Thornton, whoever it is, or Scorsese. It's being in dialogue with these people who are far more interesting than me, and suddenly you see the world through their eyes. And I mean, it's such a privilege. I'm also pretty good at sitting down and falling asleep in front of a movie with the kids, or gardening. I don't know about you, but that
gardening?
Oh my God, I'm a terrible gardener. But my God, do I? No, I want to die, having not killed as many things as I'm killing at the moment. But yes, it's. I'm learning patience slowly.
And what about parts for women? Because the thing that's very striking about your career is you seem to have managed to achieve something that an awful lot of, I think, actors, female actors, aspire to, but struggle with, which is to constantly reinvent yourself on screen, to constantly play different and more challenging and perhaps unexpected parts. How hard do you have to work to make sure that people don't pigeonhole you? And I do think that's something that probably affects female actors more than male ones.
It wasn't really a plan at the outset. I mean, you know, when I first, an Australian actor coming out of the theatre, and I did start relatively late. I think the first film I made, I was 25, which at the point that I entered the industry in actress years, it was basically like being an 87-year-old. You know, my use-by date loomed large. The industry has changed so much for actresses. Of course, not enough, and certainly not for actresses of colour. But I think I would take up opportunities or see an opportunity in what was a quote-unquote girlfriend role to try and turn it into something. I've never been the one to sort of option books for me to play the lead role. I've never wanted to get anywhere in particular. It's still on the road, so to speak.
You mentioned, you know, the use-by date of the female actor, which used to be, you know, early 30s. I was particularly struck.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
I'm in Cannes this time by these, you know, and I know they're always there, but these huge billboards of brilliant actors like Julia Roberts and Kate Winslet, you know. But the thing that struck me was the sort of airbrushed back to when we probably first watched them in their first movie. And I wonder how debilitating that is. Do you also feel that pressure?
I think if I thought about it too much, if I was on social media, yes, I could totally feel that. It's a very human thing to feel, and you don't have to be an actor or an actress to feel that. But I think I try to look out rather than, you know, look physically in. I mean, that this stuff is changing anyway. And I remember talking to Cindy Sherman about you know, the way her canvas has changed. And it's interesting that by not running away from the fact that her face and her physique has aged, she's embraced digital technology more. So she's kept evolving as an artist. And I think obsessive introspection and narcissism is an enemy, like self-consciousness. It's an enemy for any artist or anyone wanting to create anything. I think it's about connecting out into the conversations and saying, what does this face, this body, this age offer me? I don't think it's just happening in the with performers. I think it's everyone.
No, absolutely.
I think the AI conversation is only exacerbating that. And I find interestingly that a lot of filmmakers are really focusing on reality. And it's interesting, you know, the whole thing about the Marvel Universe, people being a little bit tired of being transported so far away from anything outside our experience. I think the rise of the documentary is saying that audiences really do want to be told stories that are coming, hidden stories that are coming out of, you know, that we're perhaps not looking at, and the patina of things. But I'm actually more concerned, to be honest, with the effect of these technologies on the creators themselves. Like, what is going to be the impact on for writers, for actors? You know, are we going to have to copyright our own faces? Because it's, you know, the how, you know, it's been interesting working with an artist like, you know, Andy Serkis, who's involved in authoring performances with motion capture and using that technology so that it's still human centric. But I don't know what the onslaught of AI is going to bring in terms of the human element of what I love about what I do.
It's so interesting you say that, because I think Tom Hanks was quoted recently as saying the biggest business in Hollywood at the moment is selling your future. And he doesn't mean like tomorrow. Have you been approached for your future, Kate?
For my future?
Have you been approached for your future? Yeah.
Talk about not wanting to see airbrushing. There's certainly no airbrushing in The New Boy. You know, I'm a sunburnt alcoholic nun. So it's quite a ways away from something like Nightmare Alley.
It's the role you've been fighting for all your life. Come
all
on.
All my life.
It is incredibly beautiful, mesmerizingly beautiful, the film. And I know that I think when you were there, because it is a rare thing for you to be back in Australia making movies, but when you were there, I think the sheer awesome beauty of Tasmania after a rainstorm brought you to tears. Does that suggest a kind of visceral pull on you? You mentioned when we first started talking about this magnetic pull of Australia on Australians or your birthplace, wherever you come from. But is there a suggestion that, you know, Sussex, that the glories of the pastoral countryside in Sussex don't have the same hold on you as the beauty of Tasmania post a rainstorm?
No, I absolutely love the English countryside. There's something when it's been a very, very wet, as we all know here, but it was when the sun comes out here, it is like nowhere else. And I do find, I must admit, the extremities in Australia are quite terrifying. I mean, it's interesting that Australia has produced so many amazing cinematographers because they learn to work with incredibly harsh light and make monumental and powerful and beautiful imagery. But the pastoral here is so, so beautiful. But it was interesting in the pandemic, I think, for me, that I did feel a really strong pull to go back to Australia. And it was interesting shooting in South Australia. That was the place where I made my very, very first sort of, wouldn't even call it featurette. So, and just before the pandemic, at Dirty Films, we'd made a television series about onshore detention of refugees and asylum seekers. And so we were there in South Australia. So to go back to South Australia, it did feel like home. But, you know, my children are in school here and we're very much settled here. And it is interesting to be here with the coronation and being having been born in a colony and having just returned to Australia to work with an Indigenous filmmaker and to see how alive, as it should and must be, the reckoning with many countries' colonial past is really coming to the fore at the moment.
How much do you think that looking back at past injustice is a helpful tool to move forward? How much do you think that film has the power to change hearts and minds, I guess?
Well, I think film, any form of storytelling, allows us to get to the guts of issues in a way that's an embrace rather than a slap. I think often when we deal with it through political discourse, we can be divided with one another, certainly at the moment. And it's all about reconciliation. And in order to do that, voices that have been marginalized for a long time need to be heard. But I think where film can be a helpful tool through which to have that conversation in an inclusive and non-threatening way is it invites you into what seems to be a fantasy. So you you know, with the new boy, it's this, as you that this young boy is unceremoniously and quite violently dumped on the doorstep of a monastery. But he's not a victim. He has immense spiritual power that is as strong and as rich and as deep as people who have for millennia believed in Christ. And the thing is that he has a curiosity to try and attend to the imagery and the plight of Jesus as this, you know, from his perspective, this wooden cross, this man who's tortured with a crown of thorns, with nails through his hands. He feels for him. And I think that's what Warwick Thornton, the Indigenous director of New Boys, kept saying to me, is what he finds bewildering about a lot of Western religions, about Catholicism, for instance, is it's incurious about Indigenous cultures. And that a lot of Indigenous cultures, and they're all, of course, incredibly different, they're not a monolith, that they're able to say, well, what does that bring? What can we learn from this figure Christ? Whereas Christ, the people who worship Christ, rarely say that about Indigenous cultures. And so I think that's the interesting perspective of New Boy, is it's full of curiosity, but it's also full of naivete. And I think the New Boy might be innocent of the dark past of Catholicism, but in a way, innocence can be a strength, but naivete is incredibly dangerous, because I think there's a willful naivete in a lot of people saying, well, I didn't know about that. I didn't know that happened. It's like, well, you now do. And so this film might inspire you to go and find out more about it.
So we've talked about your last two film extravaganzas. You've mentioned wanting to get back to the theatre. I know there's not a single person out there who's watched you in action who wouldn't want to see you treading the boards again. Is it likely to happen? Maybe?
Oh, look, I'd love to be back on stage. You know, I was talking to a friend who's asked me for years to play Hamlet. And Hamlet as a human entity, because there's a lot of questions. Obviously,
are you saying genderless?
Yes, I think. I mean, I've always looked
like at Orlando that, sort of thing, or
yes, in a way, it's like when you look at the portrait of Dorian Gray, and a friend of ours has done an extraordinary production at the Sydney Theatre Company, Kip Williams, and he, you know, he had a woman play that central character. It was a one-woman show, actually. It'll hopefully English audiences will get to see it. But it's, you know, sometimes when you, as we were talking about earlier, you know, having played Bob Dylan, that you move into the metaphorical and poetic ends of a character often when you kind of don't allow for simple conversations to be had about gender, that certain concerns are human first before they have an orientation ascribed to it. So I would love to go back on stage. I think primarily because stage is such a non-literal space at its best, and it invites audiences to make poetic connections. And so hopefully soon, but it's, you know, the hours are, I don't want the things in my garden to die.
Well, you know that's going to happen anyway, frankly.
Well, quite. Yes. Don't rub it in. I've had no luck with the cauliflower, but that's because of a particular butterfly that likes them. So I'm kind of in my own square inch doing my miniature version of rewilding. Well, that's what I tell myself for, you know, my failure as a gardener.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up Quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's Quince.com/upgrade.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. Hello? Fresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.